Welcome to Life and Love in the Q, a podcast for the LGBTQIA2S+ community, those who support them, and those who just want to learn more.
Together we share the stories and the science of the space and grace to live life in full color.
I'm Jillian Abbey, proud lesbian and mother, Hay House author, queer blogger, and TikTok something or other.
And I'm Trisha Peterson. I'm an LGBTQ ally, proud mom of six, professor and researcher of identity and the social narratives that impact the way we live and love.
So open your mind, open your heart, and welcome to Life and Love in the Q.
Oh, Dr. Trisha, I'm excited for today. I know we start every episode like that. Like, I'm excited for this episode, but I am legit excited for this one because two episodes ago we got a little spicy.
Yep.
Last episode we got a little heavy.
It did get heavy, huh?
And so this time we are going into feel good mode and we are going to talk about self-care because you and I have been through some tough stuff.
Yeah, and that hell and that.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have as well. And one of the main questions I get from people are, how did you get through the hard things? Like, what sort of self-care did you do that helped you get through the messy middle of coming out, that helped you through divorce? And there's actually a lot that I did. So I thought it would be really good for both of us to share the different tools that helped us. And again, results may vary. But we're going to give you a lot of ideas today of different ways that we found support through our challenges. And then this is going to be a two-part episode because you and I each have a certain type of therapy or self-care or however. We each have a thing that we have a lot more information on that is and something we feel more passionate about, I guess, or like, I don't know, just a really cool therapy that you need to know more about. So Without further ado, do you want to say some words?
Well, actually, the thing that just came to my mind as you were saying that, when you said, you know, there's, I don't even know what word you used, but just how much my self-care has changed in the past 4 years. Like, I was just looking at my dissertation and part of my dissertation requirements were that I reported what I was doing for self-care. Because of the type of dissertation I wrote, I actually had to report on the ethical considerations that I had for my own self-care.
Wow.
Normally, when we do research, the researcher has to report their ethical considerations for their research participants. But since I was the research participant, I had to report on my personal considerations.
Fascinating.
It was super fascinating. And it was a part of my dissertation that everybody that read it was real, they were fascinated by it. And so I was just reading that list versus what I do now. And it's quite different. So it is really interesting. I'm excited for our conversation today.
Yeah, I am too. And looking back in my own process of what I considered to be self-care or what felt like care to me, even just a few years ago versus now, it's changed too. So I feel like self-care can fall into some different buckets. I feel like there's the bucket of self-care of like the things that society tells us are self-care that are supposed to be self-care. I know one that you and I have in common that is supposed to be like self-care and does not feel like self-care to both of us are pedicures.
Yes. I don't know who thought that was ever self-care.
Like, seriously, listeners, do any of you out there, you're like, yes, pedicure time. I'm so anxious the whole time in the chair. And yes, I love how my toes look at the end, but I have gotten so few pedicures in my lifetime because it's so uncomfortable for me. I'm just on edge the entire time.
Yeah.
And then people are like, oh, you got pampered. And I was like, I feel like I just army crawled across nails right now. I don't know. I don't feel good, but my toes look nice. Thank you for noticing.
Well, and I've heard somebody say before that anything that we do that's maintenance So pedicures, manicures, getting our hair colored doesn't count as self-care. But I want to say, I hate when people try to put a rule system around self-care and play. I feel the same way about play. Like, don't tell me what play is, because then it's what's playful to you, not playful to me.
Yeah.
So yeah, pedicures do not feel good to me either. Not self-care.
Right. So that's my one bucket of things where we're like, this is self-care. And I'm like, I don't feel very cared right now. And then I think there's the bucket of things that we do. At least I know I fell into this bucket a lot of things that feel good to me in the moment, but don't necessarily, aren't part of my healing journey. And I guess the first that comes to mind for me, well, as I was coming out or as I was masking heavily, I would dissociate and disconnect from my life a lot. So for me, what I considered self-care was going into the shower and blasting music really loud. And that felt really good to me in the moment because it let me check out of life. I think it had a purpose. I don't know if it gets classified as self-care though, because it was kind of me trying to escape my life. And all of that I've learned from the research is that dissociation does have a purpose. When we feel like we need to escape our life, it's probably because we need that mental reprieve. I don't know. So I wanted to get your thoughts on things like, you know, I know people doom scroll on their phone or they'll like binge watch Netflix and it feels really good. It feels like we need that pause or that break, but is that self-care?
I think I fall into a pretty unique perspective on this. And I think I've shared this quote before that I shared with a student, but it's not dysfunctional if it's intentional. And so to me, if you know that you need 5 minutes to check out and you know you love the way that the shower feels, then that to me is still self-care. It is caring for a need that you have for yourself. I think that when it is escapism, and again, this is just my personal opinion, when it's escapism, it's when it's not monitored. It's not, it's a true escape. It's a, I can't face the world anymore. I'm going to binge Netflix. I've been binging a show on Netflix because it's just freaking ass good. Like, I like the show and I want to be there to watch this show come to an end. It doesn't feel dysfunctional to me. I'm not sitting down to the TV to try to escape or to avoid anything. I just really like that show. And actually, so to me right now, it does feel like self-care because I usually don't give myself permission to do that. Loving the show.
And I guess that was going to be my question is like, does there have to be a care component to it? Because almost in that situation for you, it sounds like there is a care component. I watch this, it makes me feel happy or it makes me feel lighter or I'm just entertained. I laugh and that laughing feels good. But I can see too, and this especially with social media, like little doses of social media, or if you're on the right side of social media and you can be like, okay, this feels good. And then it's very easy though to cross over into, oh my gosh, I have 3 hours passed. And here I am scrolling through reels or TikToks and it went from happy little goats to like angry politicians. I don't know what happened.
That's how I feel about Pinterest. Like I'm dying to get a tattoo. And so I keep scrolling Pinterest to look at tattoos, but I have to put a limit on it. Like, okay, I've got 30 minutes. I'm going to look at tattoos today.
Gotcha.
I don't consider that self-care either. That my Pinterest searching, but I totally get it. Yeah. We can get lost in the scroll very easily. And I think we get lost when it is escapism.
Okay.
Way to kind of tell if it's a self-care thing is, can you quit it? You know, do you know what you're doing? Are you aware of what you're doing? Do you get lost? I think self-care we don't get lost in.
No, and I kind of wish I did more. Wouldn't it be great if you're like, I don't know what happened today. I ended up with a 7-hour massage and I just meditated for hours because it was so easy and had to hang out on the beach eating fresh fruit all day. It was, man, what a day. We don't have those problems.
I don't think we do. And I think once we get there, you know, once we get to that point, then it is something again that we've planned intentionally. And it's not that it's bad. I love beach days.
Heck yeah.
you know, but yeah, I think that self-care and well, and actually a beach day would be something that you do to care for yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
When you know that you're escaping and or not escaping, but you're taking time away from work and you're taking time away from the regular scheduled programs of your life. And
yeah. So then would you say is our self-care activities ones that kind of feel like they light us up a bit? Like you mentioned with your show, it's something you're excited to watch and do, even if it's looking for tattoos on Pinterest. And I totally have a tattoo board and I'll also never get a tattoo, but I am obsessed with them. Is that part of the difference of finding enjoyment in it versus just to, the only thing I'm enjoying about this is I'm not doing what I have to do.
I feel like no, because I feel like, so one of the things, I've got a client right now who is in pretty constant fight or flight mode. She's had a lot of trauma in her life. And what I've just prescribed to her, if I can call it a prescription, is every hour to take a 5-minute breath break where she goes into the backyard or she goes into, I go into my closet when I'm doing these, but you can go anywhere, but where you just like sit down and ground and breathe for 5 minutes. To me, there's nothing really enjoyable about that, but it is self-care to give your nervous system a break. What I've talked to her about is it's a lot like a yoga practice. You work really hard for 55 minutes in yoga and you take a 5-minute shavasana. The 5-minute shavasana is the most important part. It's the integrative posture. It integrates everything that you learned about yourself and your body in that 55 minutes. And so that's what I'm telling her. That's going to be her self-care for a while because it's the only thing she's really got capacity to do. She's just really in a state of burnout and overwhelm.
Yeah.
So she's not going to grab a lot of joy from that, but she's going to get her nervous system under control. And so to me, that's even self-care.
100%. I am loving that you made this distinction now, because I had a craniosacral therapy session recently, and we'll get into craniosacral therapy because that's one of my huge self-care things. It's throughout my book, Perfectly Queer. It was a huge help to me. But in the session I had most recently, the message and thought that kept coming up for me was protect the vessel, meaning that I hear all the time, like, our body is just the vessel that carries our soul. And we like dismiss and discard the body, like, oh, we're just stuck with this meat suit that my beautiful, vibrant soul, it has to slug around everywhere. The message I was getting was protect the vessel. And so for me, that means eating healthy and exercising and more movement in my day. And to be honest, those things don't spark joy in me while I'm doing them. But I know that I feel the benefit after the fact, and that eventually I will get into a rhythm where it's like, this does feel good. I do look forward to exercise, or I do look forward to this like deeply satisfying meal, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, fascinating. I love that you brought that up.
And I want to point out, it becomes self-deprecation. Self-care can become self-deprecation very quickly if we beat ourselves up for not being good enough at it. So you're yourself up because you know, I just took a break and I had 2 Oreos, but I love Oreos and I don't,
heck yes,
I don't happen to care that they're not vegetables. So, but I know, luckily for me, I don't have to beat myself up over Oreos.
Yeah.
If you're somebody who wants to go to the gym because you know it's better for your body, but you're beating yourself up because you're not strong enough or good enough or lifting enough, you're not seeing enough progress. Well, self-care can become self-deprecation very quickly.
Mm. And I think that's a good point, that self-care may go in steps or levels, which is why too, I wanted to share the different things, because it's not just one tool that I've used where it's like, oh, this works and this will work for you too. And I know the same is true for you as well. Yeah. So do you want to share a few or kind of your self-care evolution?
Well, so the first thing that actually came to my mind is I used to love to walk, and walking was a huge self-care thing that I did. I could walk in the house that we lived in when I was married. I could walk around the pond, and I loved it, absolutely loved it. But my therapist actually at one point, while I was writing my dissertation, actually, so during 2021, she actually told me I needed to stop walking so much because I was walking to escape. So that's, again, that's an example of something that I've done. But I actually, for me, very often, walking is my self-care. And then I go to yoga for self-care very much right now. I'm specifically going to a yoga studio that practices a different kind of yoga than I teach. And so I'm getting a kind of yoga experience that's very, very new to me, which feels very, very soothing to my heart and soul.
What kind can you share?
It's just vinyasa. It's just they very, very, very different. The way that they've got it set up is just, I'm a fast power type of a teacher. And these are slow power classes. I teach hot yoga, but this is a different level of hot yoga room. So it's a very different experience. I'm not really sure how the owner has done this, but it's very cool.
That's awesome. This is why I love yoga, because I'm very much like a yin yoga and a kundalini person. I used to go do sadhana at like 4:50 in the morning or whatever it was. And it was 2 hours of intense chanting and breathing and exercise. And I was like, this is awesome. I didn't find a lot of other people that found it as awesome as I did. But again, this is kind of like, there's so many branches to the yoga tree, but I think it's really cool to, you know, so for anyone who's like, well, I tried yoga for self-care and that was crap. Try a new branch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I go to sound baths right now. That's one of the things that I do now that I do very frequently. I try to go to 2 or 3 sound baths a week. And then I love to sit by the pool. So for me, the swimming pool is self-care.
Can we rewind a sound bath a little bit more? Because I do not have a lot of experience there. Can you tell me what happens in a sound bath?
So for the ones that I go to, they have the singing bowls, if you've ever seen singing bowls. And they have a gong and chimes and a couple of different other instruments they use. They've got this amazing like wave machine thing or wave instrument. We have nice little lounging chairs and blankets, and you just lay down and somebody is playing all these instruments for an hour and you're just basically bathing in the sound.
I love it.
It's amazing. It's so relaxing and it's so good for my, right now I'm actually doing that very specifically because I'm trying to get my nervous system to be able to stay neutralized for a full 24 hours. Right now I'm actually, that's something I'm personally struggling with, is I really can't seem to go a full 24 hours without my nervous system going into kind of a heightened response system. And so I'm still trying to just kind of cool my nervous system down. So that's what I do. Those are the 3 biggest things that I do.
But you have, I was going to say, there's one more though that we're going to talk about.
There is one more we'll talk about next week.
Okay. Well, I have some different ones. I love the whole sound therapy thing. And my craniosacral therapist does incorporate that somewhat into her practice, which I think is really cool, just to sense the vibrations of all of that. But when I started out kind of exploring more about self-care, and this was going back to when I started in massage therapy school, I was very much like a disembodied head. Like I lived all up in my head and had no body awareness. So for me at that time, sound therapy would have been way too far out for me to get. I don't think I would have perceived kind of the feelings of it as much. I probably would have just been like, when is this over? Are you going to play a song? You know, so that, and that's the thing that I think is really cool about therapy is that it, and self-care, is that it can be an evolution in a journey based on what you can perceive and know. For me, I had to start getting back in my body. And so that started as getting physical massage and just getting, you know, whether that was Swedish massage or neuromuscular therapy, but just feeling all of the parts of my body and integrating myself as one whole human being, like a head that also had a body. I also found that a weighted blanket was really helpful for me in calming my nervous system. And that was a huge part for me early on in the coming out process. Because a weird thing about coming out, well, I guess it's not so weird, but you lose intimacy and connection with this person that you have had. And this is through the divorce process too. You're going through a very hard thing and the person that you used to be able to hug so tightly, have that physical full body connection with, is like, that's not possible anymore. And so I needed ways that I could feel that body contact and bring myself into my body. And so weighted blanket was one way, but grounding was another way. And I know we don't have time on our episode to go through the details of all of it, but it was as simple as me going out and standing on the grass in my yard and picturing myself growing roots into the earth and picturing the energy of the earth, the dirt. I always picture it as dirt. I don't know why. Going up and filling every corner of my body. So I just, again, felt whole and felt integrated. But also in my coming out, I did a lot of work with therapists, not only like licensed mental health counselors, but also life coaching. And life coaching was an area that surprised me because I was one of those people who was like, why do I need somebody to coach me on how to live life? Like, isn't that the most natural thing? No, love my life coach. She's changed my life. Gina Giraldi, look her up, call her. Amazing perspective that I was able to get from both therapists and life coaches. The therapists, again, like you do as well, providing the science and the knowledge and research to let me know that, like, you're not crazy or you're not unusual. You're not a space alien. You're not as weird as you think or you're trying to tell yourself.
Yeah.
You know, hugely helpful to validate my experience.
I love that.
But yeah. And then craniosacral therapy, which that's my spoiler alert, what I will be going into more detail in the next session. And I have had some really wild craniosacral therapy sessions, but basically what it is a type of body work. The client is fully clothed. They're generally face up on a treatment table and the practitioner uses 5 grams of pressure, which is about the weight of a nickel. It's a very, very light touch. They work all over the body and it not only helps release restrictions in our physical body, but it works on a somato-emotional level. And so the issues in the tissues, for anyone who's read the book, The Body Keeps Score, it's about our memories, our traumas, our emotions that are stored not just in our minds, but throughout our body and how we can tap into those and let them go. Like my liver made me gay. It's in the book twice. It's kind of...
That makes me laugh. I'm actually, as you're kind of saying all of those things, I'm thinking, I've definitely participated in therapy and energy healings of different sorts. But again, I kind of want to point out that really anything that we consider self-care or even like seeking out help professionals, there was a time when I was doing a lot of hypnotherapy and I actually really do love the concept and using hypnotherapy just as a means of dealing with some of those stored memories. But I was doing it way too much. So it was more of an escapism type of a thing once I really looked back on it. But also I was in active trauma at the time. And in hindsight, now I know more about hypnotherapy and active trauma, and it's actually contraindicated. Which means you should not do hypnotherapy when you are in active trauma. And the best way kind of to explain it is, you know, we always use the analysis is a lion chase, you know, back in the saber-tooth caveman days, the saber-tooth tigers were chasing the caveman. And so, yes, they needed their fight or flight systems, but we don't have saber-tooth tigers now. Well, we do have stimuli that hit us very frequently. And if that's active, we would never have hypnotized a caveman while he was running from the saber-toothed tiger. But we have therapists now hypnotizing people who are literally running from their saber-toothed tigers. So just be really, really mindful that just a kind of gut checking, why am I even participating in this activity? And is there anything that does truly need my immediate attention?
Yeah. And I apologize. I didn't mean to laugh during that, but I'm getting the visual of this cave person who is like running for their life. And this therapist in their suit walks up and is like, excuse me, do you have a moment here? Sit in my lounge chair. Like,
a manifestation coach who says, let's visualize being safe from the saber-toothed tiger.
Right.
Now is not the time to be safe.
Meanwhile, my foot is getting eaten right now and it doesn't feel very good.
Yes. I think that, like, I mean, if you break it down into that perspective, which is funny because anyway.
Yeah, but I love you talking about visualizing too, because another big part of my self-care and healing was the kind of the spiritual aspect and envisioning a positive future, more optimistic future. And again, there it's easy to get caught up in escaping to that. Even on the spiritual side, I know it's, you know, I love my oracle decks. I love meditating. I love channeling and journaling. And at the same time, like, it can be good and it can also send you into a tailspin of, I don't know, of, for me, sometimes it was becoming overly reliant on the message or getting a message and then thinking, oh, this is what I have to do now, as opposed to I am supported and, you know, I can steer my path. I know my spirit guides are here supporting me, but they're not telling me do this or do that. And I think there was, for me, sometimes I put a lot of pressure on myself of just going back to those feelings of like, oh, well, this is what my guides want me to do. And I have to do this, even though this isn't feeling good to me right now. I don't know. I'm going off on a tangent here, but you're nodding. So I feel like maybe you've got something along a similar line.
That's what I mean. I think anything, I love my tarot cards, but I have to limit myself. I love to journal, but I have to limit myself. Well, I actually would not consider my journal self-care. It's part of my morning routine, but I would say the self-care part of my journal is actually when I go back and read it.
Mm.
Myself permission to recognize patterns. Like, it's almost, and again, I have to be really careful with myself, and I'm really good at beating myself up. So I have to be really careful about going back and going, oh, wait, we've repeated this lesson a couple of times. Maybe let's choose differently. That feels like self-care to me, because I'm making a decision to do things differently. If I look back and go, God damn it, this is the third time I've done this, you know, that I've repeated this message in my journal and I've got things like this that I've repeated multiple times and I still don't do it or I still don't believe it. And then I beat myself up. So self-care should at the end feel like you did something to care for yourself. And if it feels like you used it to beat yourself up, then you need to analyze why.
Yeah. That's a great point. And I also think it's interesting with journaling, because I don't know that I would have considered, I don't consider journaling in the moment to necessarily be self-care. But one thing that my life coach pointed out that I don't do enough of is celebrate my wins. And so the one thing I do love about journaling is going back and seeing those things that I wished for 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And going, holy cow, Jill, like, you're there and you didn't think you could be there and you're there. Like, it's, for me, it's a personal growth journey. And so then I do a little happy dance and it's like, all right, I'm going to celebrate that instead of beating myself up, which is, I think, our default. And it's so easy to go back to. The one way I care for myself is I actively go back to see how I've changed. I really value change. I love people who can evolve. And, you know, when it's their season to grow, they grow. When it's their season to rest, they rest. Like, I think that too is just such an incredible, magical thing.
I was just going to say, so 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, I would not have considered a nap a rest or a self-care. But now I consider laying down on my couch self-care. So again, I think it changes. I grew up in a home where laying down during the middle of the day was punished. So I grew up really afraid of laying down. And so now the fact that I can actually sit down on the couch during the day feels really, and not be mean to myself about it.
Yes.
Feels very self-care.
Yeah.
And not analyze. Last week I actually took a nap that surprised me. I didn't feel tired at all, but all of a sudden I fell asleep. And for 2 days, I analyzed it after. What's wrong with me? What did I do? Well, I guess I was tired. Like, But I analyzed it to death.
The challenges of being a PhD.
I know. And obsessed with self-care.
Yeah. Oh, I love it though. I think this is a lot of, I don't know, if anything, I hope that other people also feel seen and that self-care is not necessarily the easiest thing to find. I know we all talk about how everyone needs it. And I still think that a lot of people struggle to understand what it looks like for them and that it can appear in a lot of different ways. And there's reasons why sometimes it feels good and sometimes it doesn't feel good.
Well, we capitalistic world. So the social narrative is it has to be something big and expensive.
Right.
And we live in a polar world where we believe that there's a right and a wrong way to do everything. And so we're afraid of getting it wrong. Mm-hmm. So we judge our naps, like we judge our pedicures, we judge whatever it is that we do.
Yeah.
Get strawberry acai lemonades 2 or 3 times a week because, I mean, I love the lemonades, but I really love the baristas at my Starbucks that work on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I go to Starbucks more for the barista than I do for the lemonade itself.
Yeah.
To me, that feels like self-care.
I had a friend tell me once too, that that's kind of the thing with coffee in the morning too, which I don't know. I feel I very much need my coffee regardless, but they said it's such a sensory experience that it's the routine. It's the ceremony.
That's how my daughter explains her coffee.
Yeah.
Experience.
And so that morning cup, and that's in some ways it's true because it's like, well, if I grab a cup in the afternoon or if I'm driving through a place and pick up a cup of coffee, it's not the same enjoyment of that morning cup of hearing it brew and then smelling it in the air and then holding my favorite cup while I'm in my robe. And I go outside this morning. I was outside grounding, standing on the grass with my coffee and looking at my favorite alligator, who we've called Gady because, you know, we're gay. And so everything has to be Gady with a Y. Yeah. So, but that's the thing. It's like, this is just, that is something that I've intentionally carved out every morning for myself because I do really enjoy it. And it's a time where I intentionally don't put anything else on my plate so that I have time to just be present, be in that moment. And just all these little pieces bring me so much joy and start my day so much better.
Yeah.
And they don't really cost a whole, I mean, maybe if you want an alligator in your backyard, maybe that will cost you, that's going to cost you, but, or so, if you're in Florida, you can find them anywhere.
I've never seen an alligator when I've been in Florida, so I'm going to have to come.
Okay. Come on over. We can have coffee.
Yeah.
Listeners, you're invited too. It's a party. It's a self-care party in the
party
backyard.
At Jill's house. Yeah, well, and before we were talking about a couple of other things, I know people listen to music and dance around their house. That's a big thing that I know a lot of people do for self-care. I just was barely introduced to shaking. I mean, it seems fairly self-explanatory and obvious, but so I've been trying to do shaking a little bit, not so much about self-care again, but for nervous system regulation. And I love to have lunch dates with friends. There's just something about that that really does light my soul up.
Heck yeah. Well, because again, too, as much as the hermit in me likes to think that I could be totally happy and cared for in my little hermit cave, the reality is I love connecting with people. Yeah. Even as an introvert, it lights me up too. So yeah, I love it. Well, I'm really excited to get into our next episode. Do you want to give any little teasers as to what your newer, bigger kind of self-care piece is going to be? Or are we going to leave them totally hanging here?
Let's leave them hanging.
He went there. All right.
It's
the anticipation builds.
Yep.
Y'all, I'm just going to say this is going to knock your socks off because every time I learn a new facet of the personality of Dr. Trisha Peterson, and maybe today that was for you was tarot cards, you're like, wait a second, the Mormon mom PhD yoga teacher does tarot. Okay, sure. She's got another one
up my sleeve.
I love it. Oh, and your Pinterest board of tattoos also, that was a new one for me. I love it. Okay.
when am I gonna get it? Who knows? I may not.
All right. Who knows, that may become a self-care thing, and next year you'll be like, check out my sleeve.
All right, everyone, have a great day. It was nice to talk to you again, Jill.
Yes, take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Life and Love in the Queue. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and share. And if you have questions, contact us at lifeandloveintheque@gmail.com. Until next time, Queue Crew.